Welcome to the Lucius Lyron Podcast, where we dive deep into the mysteries of the universe and our place in it. I am your host, Lucius Lyron. Today, I will be speaking on a chapter in my first book entitled The One World Order of Truth. I had wrote this book back in 2016, and it was finished. I want to say I was done January, February of 2017. And so I had released it then. And now, you know, as time has progressed, there were certain things in the book that was in the original version of it that I actually had took out. So I'm going to be doing a revised version on this book, and I'm going to be redoing a lot of things with this first book to update it and to add things that at the time people were just not ready to read about. And now with things that have, you know, has happened over the years and stuff, I feel like more people are becoming more self-aware of a lot of things and paying attention to a lot of things a lot more than we were before. So that's something that's really important. And so today I wanted to get into speaking about this particular first chapter and, you know, kind of giving my, you know, it's like having the opportunity to hear an author speak about their chapter and then kind of giving you footnotes in a sense, I guess, something like that. So, so this is going to be a cool episode because I am, you know, prepping for my solar eclipse podcast that's going to be coming out. It's going to be dropping on the 7th, the day before the solar eclipse happens. And so that's going to be good. And I just figured, you know, before I really go heavily into that, that I would spend some time on something that I had, you know, wrote about that is very significant to this time frame. And yeah, just want to share this with you guys. So let's go ahead and dive in and see what I wrote about. All right. I really like this quote that I wrote at the top of it. And it says, "The new elite will rise as the leaders of truth, and they will be known as the illuminated ones of knowledge and magic." I like that. I definitely feel that I am a illuminated one. And because of the enlightenment that I have encountered over the years, has really shed a lot of light for me, just with my path and the path that us as humans are on, and the importance of really understanding and understanding our ancestors, not only our human ancestors, but also our star ancestors, because the human body is a hybrid. And that is something that we're not taught. And so we're going to get into a part in this chapter where I talk about non-coding DNA, which used to be called junk DNA. Now they're switching up and saying that is not junk, and that is non-coding DNA. So we're gonna talk about that. Get into, I think I have an article, put like a snippet of an article from this one scientist that talks about it. So let's dive into this. So what is a fact? A thing that is disputable to a case, a piece of information used as evidence or as part of a report. What is truth. That which is true or in accordance with a fact of reality that is accepted as true. When I asked myself these questions, it made me want to study more about truth based on facts and evidence. In 2007, right before the writer's strike happened, I was busy in Hollywood as a young, hot producer slash actor coming up. It wasn't until after the writer's strike, when I lost everything, that I became a researcher. In the summer of 2008, a roommate of mine and I had an encounter with a UFO that had hovered over some trees in front of the house we were renting. As we watched this UFO, all of a sudden, it took off really fast and became a bright light in the sky. It made some kind of U-turn and then disappeared. Since I've been born, I have always had encounters that some would call spiritual, meaning unseen, encounters with the Anunnaki, as well as other ET races. At a later time, I will speak more about my ET experience. Excuse me. So yeah, that is something. It took me a while to be able to be open about speaking about my spiritual encounters and stuff, because if you guys have listened to my episode on why I'm not a Christian, I speak about my upbringing and how my upbringing was predominantly Christian. And so I had to, suppress a lot of things, because I couldn't really share a lot of stuff with my family, because there was a time frame when I did, and they just assumed that it had to do with something demonic, you know, demons. And I was like, well, it doesn't feel that way to me, but okay. So, oh my gosh, excuse me. Anyway, so now keep in mind, I grew up in a very religious Christian home. My so-called father had been a pastor since I was 3. When my siblings and I were older and able to read, every summer we had to read the Bible, which for me was very, very boring. In the hours I grew up, there were never any discussions about aliens or anything along those lines. So through the years, as a researcher, I started to study Aramaic and Greek, not Hebrew, since there really was no such thing as that. And that is only a Christian way of thinking. The people in the Bible were not Hebrews, and I will get to that a little bit later. But during this particular time period, I saw something very interesting, and that was when I realized that the so-called kings of Israel and this lineage of King David, all the way to this Messiah being born through this lineage, these beings were Egyptian kings and pharaohs. Now, when I discovered this for myself, I was like, wow. This next section is not for the faint-hearted Judeo-Christian mindset, as I am going to expose what is truly going on with religion. It is entirely up to you whether you want to accept and understand what I'm about to share, as I respect that we are all on our own path of choice. There is so much extraordinary evidence coming out of these clay tablets known as Sumerian texts that it's not being absorbed into the general thinking very quickly. As I was taught in church and understood it, Moses wrote Genesis around 1250 BC, which is about 200, 500 years ago. That's what I was taught in church. Yet Sumerian tablets exist, were written at least 2,000 plus years before Moses lived. And they have the same account as the first chapters of the Bible, almost word for word. These tablets even have Adam and Eve and the names of all their sons and daughters, the whole spectrum of events described in Genesis. It was all written down before Moses ever received it. This proves that Moses was not the author of Genesis. Obviously, the truth will be hard to accept by the Christian community, but it is true. I can understand why this knowledge has taken so long to sink into our modern culture, because it's a huge deviation from the accepted history of Earth, and this minor/major truth about Moses is only a tiny part of the whole truth. Remember, Sumerian is the oldest known language in the world, older by far than works such as the Holy Bible and the Quran. It now appears that the Holy Bible was birthed out of the ashes of Sumer. Science and religions don't understand how we got here. We are all that there's a missing link between the last primate and us. We seem to come out of nowhere. We do know that we're somewhere between 150,000 to 250,000 years old, but we have no idea where we came from or how we developed. We just stepped through some mystical doorway and arrived. There's a tremendous amount of scientific evidence that part of our DNA, the part that they call, used to be called junk DNA, which is now known as non-coding, does not originate from this planet we now call Earth. Here is an article that speaks on the missing link by Dr. Anya Mendel. I believe I pronounced that right. I could be wrong, but I believe it's Anya Mendel. So let me touch on something where I talked about Earth and how, you know, the origin of the planet. So Earth used to be part of a bigger planet known as Tiamat. And this is something that has been documented and written down by people that do interstellar travel and has been around for a very long time in the universe, way longer than us. Okay, so we got to keep that in mind. Now, Tiamat is the original name of Earth, and then later on, Earth in Sumerian language becomes Kai. Now, I don't know when, I can't remember when exactly we started calling this planet Earth, but it's had many different names throughout history. Now, the ancients never called this place Earth. And a part of me feels like, especially the Sumerians, they knew Earth as Tiamat, and then later on, different cultures started to adapt different names for the planet. All right, so I just wanted to briefly kind of talk about that. So what is non-coding DNA, aka junk DNA, or what used to be junk DNA? And I have to say that I'm really happy to see that they finally have changed junk DNA to just non-coding DNA, because there's nothing junk in the body. Nothing at all. Zero, zero. You know, they tell us, oh, we don't need this, or we need, no, everything that's in this body, we need all the things, you know, because it's in place for a reason. There is nothing out of place when it comes to the human body. So let's definitely pay some respect to that. All right. In genetics, the term non-coding DNA refers to regions of DNA that are non-coding. DNA contains instructions / coding that are used to create proteins in the cell. However, the amount of DNA contained inside each cell is vast, and not all of the genetic sequences present within a DNA molecule actually code for a protein. Some of this non-coding DNA is used to produce non-coding RNA components, such as transfer RNA, regulatory RNA, and ribosomal RNA. However, other DNA regions are not transcribed into proteins, nor are they used to produce RNA molecules, and their function is unknown. Now, I know some of y'all are probably like, what in the hell are you talking about? Just research it. I'm telling you, like, this is stuff that you can research with the RNA transfer, the RNA regulatory, like, you can research, like, all that stuff. So this is like scientific terms of, you know, understanding things about our DNA. Okay. The proportion of coding versus non-coding DNA varies significantly between species. In the human genome, for example, almost all 98% of the DNA is non-coding, while in bacteria, only 2% of the genetic material does not code for anything. The term junk DNA was first used in the 1960s, but was formalized by Susumu Ona in 1972. Apologize if I'm butchering that name. Ono noticed that the amount of mutation occurring as a result of mutations set a limit for the amount of functional looks like it's pronounced loxy that could be expected when a normal mutation rate was considered. In a Nature review published in the 1980s, Leslie Orgel and Francis Crick stated that junk DNA had little specific and conveys little or no selective advantage to the organism. However, over the years, researchers have found evidence to suggest that junk DNA may provide some form of functional activity. Some lines of evidence suggest that fragments of what were originally non-functional DNA have undergone the process of exemptation throughout evolution. Exemptation refers to the acquisition of a function through means other than natural selection. And that's very, very interesting. And once again, you know, I apologize for some of the terminology and me trying to pronounce some of these scientists' names. Like, it's one thing to research and write them, but then also trying to figure out how they, you know, how you pronounce their names was something that I didn't do. I didn't try to research how to pronounce their names. So I apologize for that. That's so funny. Anyway. Okay. So once again, that's a lot of terms, a lot of things that, you know, may go over, you know, people's heads, but, I promise you, if you just research the stuff, you know, I'm pretty sure now, cause keep in mind, like I wrote this years ago. So I'm sure now there's like videos and all kind of stuff out now. Because, you know, me trying to find this, it wasn't really easy trying to find a lot of this information. Like, I had to go to the library. I had to do a lot of things. So, you know, keep in mind that a lot of my studies and a lot of information I get doesn't come off of Google or YouTube. Okay. I actually go out and read books. And that's what I suggest everyone do is don't neglect reading books, guys. You know, we can't be dependent on internet and we can't be dependent on AI. You have to go out and read and research, because advanced civilizations didn't worry about Google. They actually went to libraries. You know, it's unfortunate that we don't have the Library of Alexandria anymore, because if we still had that and it was still set up and we didn't have these fake ass Egyptologists there that are just controlling narratives, this world would be different. I promise you, it would be totally different. In 2012, a research program called the ENCODE Project concluded that around 3/4 of the non-coding DNA in the human genome did undergo transcription, and that almost 50% of the human genome was available to the proteins involved in genetic regulation, such as transcription factors. However, these findings have been criticized by other scientists who claim that accessibility of the genome segments to transcription factors does not mean they necessarily have any biochemical function, or that the transcription of the segments is in any way advantage in terms of evolution. So that's real interesting. Now, here is an article that I pieced into here, and I'm going to read this part too, because, you know, all this is very interesting. And, you know, part of the reason too why we're even getting into a lot of alien talk is, one, this is one of my favorite things to talk about. I love talking about this this topic, because it's something that we all should be speaking about. But one of the things that I wanted to mention is, you know, over the years, we've been having, especially like in the 2020s, we've been having a lot of whistleblowers come out about the UFO phenomenon, and people are really starting to talk more about this. And so in my studies, when I was looking at, you know, longevity and how, you know, the people in the Bible, I'm like, how are they living like 500 years old, 900 years old, you know? And then when you get into the Sumerian tablets and you get into like the King's List, and these people are living like 100,000 years, you're like, okay, wait a minute. So we have no idea about like life. Like, we only know life based on what we've been taught. And there is a way of experience longevity, you know? Humans really shouldn't have a short lifespan that we have. And it's really nice to see people that are, you know, wealthy and that are doing the research to, you know, understand how we can have more longevity and slow down our aging process, because there are beings that have already figured this out. So the real question is, how do we reactivate this non-coding DNA that we have? Because it's something that can be activated, because it's only dormant. You got to think about it. So what is it? If something is dormant, that means that if you ingest something or whatever, you can trigger it, right?
Awesome.
Excuse me. So what can trigger the non-coding DNA? I think it's something to think about, you know? I find it kind of fascinating that we can have these talks and have these thoughts of like, what would trigger, you know, non-coding DNA? Very interesting. All right, so let's get into this article by the Ancient Code, Ancient History. And it says, scientists have found an alien code in our DNA. Ancient engineers. Now, this, when I came across this now, this gave me so much confirmation, because when I was researching and I was looking at, you know, the so-called junk DNA, which is now truly non-coding DNA, I'm like, guys, this is alien DNA, because it doesn't exist here. And it makes a whole lot of sense why it's dormant, and it aligns up with the Sumerian tablets. So it's like, no wonder why we have to have controlled narratives by religion, because we have to believe in a sky daddy, in some creator god. And it's like, why do we have to believe that when we can actually know that we were created in the image of beings that are not from here, in their likeness? Because let me ask you something. How can you be created in a imageless being? You got to ask yourself, if something is imageless, then how in the hell are you are created in something that's supposed to have an image, but it doesn't? It makes no sense, you know? And so as a kid, that always confused me. I'm just like, how can you be created with something that has no image? Explain that. It just doesn't make any sense. And you know, and then on top of that, you know, you have a time frame with like Abraham, you know, God appears. And then when we get to Moses, God doesn't appear to Moses. Like, why? Oh, you could only see my backside. Oh, well, you didn't tell Abraham that. So is this the same God or these different gods, or what is going on here? Because this is not no one all be all God. You can clearly see that the God of the Bible is not no the one all be all God. Clearly, it's so obvious. But when you have people that are there to control the narratives, they'll take pieces of this and that and coming up with their own interpretation. You know, that's just like taking somebody's, you know, lyrics and taking it out of context and trying to have your own interpretation, when really that artist wasn't even talking about that, talking about something else. So we can clearly see that humans have always had this issue for a very long time. All right. According to mainstream scientists, alien code was found in our DNA. Extraterrestrial beings created our species. Researchers who worked for 13 years in the Human Gene Project indicated that they came across an amazing scientific discovery. They believe that the so-called 97% of non-coding sequences in the human DNA is nothing less than the genetic code of extraterrestrial life forms. They just confirmed the Sumerian tablets. Yo, remember what I said? I wrote this book in 2016. So this information has been around for a long time. Why are we not talking about this? We're talking more about Diddy and crazy, wild ass Hollywood, which we should. But more than this, though. Guys, controlled narratives. You got to keep that in mind. Controlled narratives. You have to learn how to get away and get out of controlled narratives. Let's jump back in. Originally referred to as junk DNA, its function remained a mystery for researchers. Now researchers believe that our DNA is extraterrestrial in origin. After extensive analysis, with the help of other researchers in diverse fields such as mathematics, chemistry, and programming, Maximum A. Makukova, I believe that's how you pronounce it, of the Fesinkova Astrophysical Institute has ventured out and asked if there is a possibility that what we call junk DNA, quotation marks, is actually some sort of extraterrestrial code created by an alien programmer. According to researchers from Kazakhstan, our hypothesis, I apologize for butchering these words today, man. Let me get myself together. Okay. Our hypothesis is that a more advanced extraterrestrial civilization was engaged in creating new life and planting it on various planets. Earth is just one of them. Yo, this is what they said in the tablets. Once again, confirmation of the Sumerian tablets. And keep in mind, we haven't even transcribed all the tablets, by the way. So it's saying some other stuff, too. It really is. And I think that is also saying some things that, you know, because depending on who's translating it, I sometimes question, like, their background and stuff, because I'm like, how are you transcribing this? Especially a language that has been, you know, in a sense, dead for a very long time. So very curious, but as I digress. Anyway, the researchers indicate that what we see in our DNA is a program consisting of two versions, a giant structured code and a simple or basic code. The term of researchers believe for a fact, not a belief, but for a fact that the first part of our DNA code was not written on Earth. And according to them, it is verifiable. Secondly, the most importantly, genes alone are not enough to explain the evolution / abrupt evolution process, and there must be something more in the game. According to Makuko, sooner or later, we have to accept the fact that all life on Earth carries the genetic code of our extraterrestrial cousins, and that evolution is not what we think it is. Yo, the Anunnaki has seeded this planet. And you guys have to understand, the Anunnaki is a group of different beings out here. So stop thinking, because once again, people are over here giving false messages, trying to say that the Anunnaki is a specific race. No, it's not. The Anunnaki are the Pleiadians. The Anunnaki are the Sirians. The Anunnaki are the Andromedans. The Anunnaki are the people from Orion. The Anunnaki are people from Lyra. The Anunnaki are people from Vega. I mean, come on. That's who the Anunnaki is. Y'all trying to put them all in a group, man. No. Just like how in a group we're known as humans, as a group, they're known as the Anunnaki. Okay? That's it. Now, yes, specific groups of the Anunnaki, is their DNA more encoded into ours? Absolutely. Absolutely there is. You know? We're more closer to the Pleiadians and the Sirians than anything. Okay? But that's a whole nother story. The implications of these scientific findings reinforce claims by other individuals and observers that claim to have had contact with aliens that look like humans. Yo, oh my goodness. I can't believe nobody hasn't really talked about this article. Like, I'm really surprised that I have not. Mind blowing to me. It's so wild. So wild. All right, let's continue. I'm over here getting hyped. I'm getting hyped. Okay, human-like aliens could have provided some of the genetic material necessary for human evolution. Absolutely. Human-like aliens, the Lyrans, the Pleiadians, some of the Sirians. Yes, absolutely. People in Orion. Yeah, absolutely. Created in our own image and likeness. Not some imageless God. No. Absolutely not. Come on, man. It's time to get out of the Santa Claus syndrome, adults. You know, you've been in the Santa Claus syndrome so long. Man. All right. Where did I left off at? Here we go. A quote from News Discovery. This interpretation leads them to a far-fetched conclusion that the genetic code appears that it was invented outside the solar system already several billions of years ago. This statement endorsed the idea of panspermia, the hypothesis that Earth was seeded with interstellar life. I just got done just saying that. So yeah, absolutely. It's certainly a novel and bold approach to galaxy conquest if we imagine this was a deliberate Johnny a please endeavor by super beings. Researchers at the Kazakhstan believe that the human DNA was encoded with an alien signal for an ancient extraterrestrial civilization, and they refer to it as biological Seti. Interesting, they use an Egyptian deity name. Okay, we're gonna get back to that. The mathematical code in the human DNA cannot be explained by evolution. Basically, we are living and breathing holders of some sort of alien message that can be used in a much more efficient way than radio signals. Now, this part, I just got done. I haven't watched it yet. And some of you that are listening to this podcast, y'all might have already seen it. But, yo, the three body code and that radio signal trying to send messages and now going, you know, there is, yo, the universe is wild because I haven't read my first book since I wrote it. And now going back and rereading it and seeing how information is right now in accordance to what we're talking about, and now having this show, this, you know, the three body problem that's out on Netflix. Yo, guys, the universe, she speaks. Okay. She is speaking. Okay. Let me get back to that. The radio signal. See, I got too high. Okay, I'm just going to reread this part. So basically, we are living and breathing holders of some sort of alien message that can be used in a much more efficient way than radio signals to search for extraterrestrial life. That is exactly what they were doing in the three-body problem. I'm really kind of tripping out a little bit right now. Okay, once the code had been set... Is it not called biological setting, but then it's been set? Okay. It would remain unchanged in cosmology timescales. In fact, researchers believe that our DNA is the most durable construction known, and that is why it represents an exceptionally reliable and intelligent storage for an alien signature, according to an article in the journal, I believe it's pronounced Icarus. Writing in the journal Icarus, they assert once fixed, the code might stay unchanged over cosmology timescale. In fact, it is the most durable construct known. Therefore, it represents an exceptionally reliable storage for an intelligent signature. Once the genome is appropriately rewritten, the new code with the signature will stay frozen in the cell and its progeny, which might then be delivered through space and time. Oh my goodness. Yo, wow, guys. There, you want to know why humans are special? Here you go. This is why. Ain't got nothing to do with what religion talking about. To me, this sounds far more fascinating than any religious thing that I have ever been told. Like, my goodness. Like, you, once again, it's like a sci-fi movie. This is our doom story, you know? Like, what? Scientists believe that the human DNA is arranged in such a precise way that it reveals a set of arithmetic patterns and ideographic symbolic language. These studies have led scientists to believe that we were literally invented outside of Earth several billion of years ago. Now, here's the thing about that. They think that because of the DNA that we have in us from extraterrestrial groups that, you know, live in different parts of the universe. And so they have developed themselves outside of Earth. And then now here it is us. We are a mix of them. And then whatever was here that was evolving, we became this new species known as human. Okay, so 97% of us, of our DNA, does not originate from here. And that is huge. That is why in the Sumerian tablets and in the Bible, it states we were created in the likeness and image of the gods. Not the God, not the singular, but the gods, okay? So these beings were godlike. You know, to be able to create a whole new species, you guys cannot sit up here and tell me that's not nothing divine or that's not godlike. But yet, a lot of humans want to run around here acting like they're godlike. And it's like, what are you doing? What are you doing that's so damn godlike? Nothing. Nothing. So you keep telling yourself that, but you better be about that action because I don't see it. I definitely don't see it. So, you know, but people so quick to want to proclaim certain titles, but yet there ain't no action behind that title that they want so bad. Okay. These studies have led scientists to believe. Okay. So I read that part. All right. These ideas or beliefs are anything but accepted in the scientific community. Yet these studies have proven that some researchers have talked about for decades that evolution could not have happened on its own. Facts. And that there is something extraterrestrial to our entire species. Is our entire history wrong? Absolutely. One mystery that would remain as the great question is, if extraterrestrial beings did in fact create the human race and life on the planet, then who or what created these extraterrestrial beings? Scientists have also proven that souls do not die, but return back to the universe. In this book, I will establish that there is a group of beings in our cosmic universe known as the Anunnaki gods. One of these beings, or should I say one of these gods, and particularly, who has risen to the top and become the leader of that group, personally came here to our planet eons ago to take on a more substantial and active role with the development of the human race, meaning all nationalities. Okay? Human is the race, but the human race is divided into many different nationalities, just like how you have the Anunnaki that are different races of different beings. So This God has systematically guided over the spiritual knowledge of every culture on earth, and humans use that knowledge to create religions. This one God that is now at the head of the hierarchy is the one and only creator of humanity and ruler of the earth among the other Elohim, aka Anunnaki gods and goddesses, not just masculine, feminine as well. And the feminine play one of the major roles in creating the human race. We'll get to that. And that is our father, Enki, the god of many names and many faces. So yeah, I'm going to end it with that. And we can pick back up on this a little later, because this is good. And you know, this is it's kind of unique, because you guys get to experience this with me as I'm going back rereading. So I have not reread this book in a long time. So, you know, this is kind of a special moment that I get to read this book out loud, because I've never read this book out loud before, and to be able to really talk about it, because it has a lot to do with things that are going on right within the world and stuff, and it's so amazing. I almost feel like, let's see, you know, okay, we're gonna go ahead and do something. I feel like I want to read a little bit more. Let me see. Yeah. Let me see. Would it be a good? Okay. Let's do it. Cause yeah. Cause we're getting into some juicy stuff. Let me see. Okay. Let me see some. All right. Let's do this. We're gonna read a little bit more, and yeah, we'll read a little bit more. So first I was gonna stop, but then I'm like, something's telling me to keep reading a little bit more. So we're going to do that. All right. The Anunnaki have a divine hierarchy. They came from Sirius and Orion, Pleiades, just like I was telling you guys, and sit at the top of a very large empire in the universe, which religion calls the Kingdom of God. Now, let's take a look into the God of the Christians. He wants to lure as many people as possible into his positive white love and light domains, which he has created. Forcing people to do so is difficult, cumbersome, and tiresome, and does not work in the long run. It is far more effective to make people want to go there by appealing to their insecurities through making them feel deserving, special, and privileged, and even loved. That way, it has a deeper effect. They are then dumbed down and do not know any better. Therefore, obedience results in making it easier for all concerned. In order to make people want to go into his version of heaven, he needs to give them purpose. So this God came to realize it needed to create multiple paradigms with varying degrees of light, ratio, and frequency. The following example can be seen in evangelistic churches all over the world. When people are in church, praying and projecting their deepest intention towards their God, when people are singing songs with arms outstretched in the air, tears rolling down their cheeks due to the overwhelming emotions, if one knows the power of intention that we as a human race have, then imagine and comprehend the vast amount of energy which is being projected in those moments. These preachers are consuming the energy for all they are worth. That is why when they have a planetary race of humans and the universe worshiping them, they have never ever been fed so much power in all their existence. This is more than a drug for them. They need adoration, they need praise, and they need worship. They are who they are because of that energy. If everyone was to wake up out of their trance and stop worshiping and started understanding the knowledge and wisdom of life from within their own hearts, then all of this religious insanity, along with its prejudice, wars, and suffering, would just simply go away. There is a notion being propagated on our planet that there is no evidence for a historical Jesus ever having existed. But there is plenty of evidence of the 18th dynasty, which was in Egypt, that deals with an E.T. royal Anunnaki family. The Jesus of the church, not the true incarnation of the Son of the Morning in the 18th dynasty, but the Jesus of the church is a personality and character that has been portrayed to the masses, served up to the masses, sold to the masses, and has been systematically forced into our human psyche. I totally agree that Jesus is a fictitious character made up of a mirage of previous Anunnaki story characters and religious programs created by the priesthood and their demiurge that took place as far back as the fall of Atlantis. People do not actually realize that the modern day Christian religion is of many religions of the time, specifically in 325 AD, when the Old Testament and the Gospel, or should I say the Good Spell, was created at the Creed of Nicaea by Emperor Constantine. Now, I will say that the Old Testament was definitely something that was major back in that time frame, but also the New Testament came like a little bit later. And man, the one thing about the New Testament is there's so many different time frames of it being written that it's really hard to kind of pinpoint who really wrote the New Testament. And oh man, I feel like there was this guy, what's his name? Marcion, it might be, but apparently there was a guy who really did not like the church and you know, Yahweh and all that whole stuff. And so what he did was he wrote the New Testament to kind of like combat the church. And then, you know, then after that, I don't know. I can't remember what exactly happened after that, but you know, it's just a whole lot of it's a whole lot of stuff to basically, you know, try to take a book, you know, word for word, but yet it's been so distorted, you know, throughout time, because even just going, because keep in mind, guys, this is way before the Bible that we know it was actually even created. So who knows what was in those texts and those books at that time frame, because the Bible that we know of that modern day society should focus on is the time period of the early 1600s, around like 1611, 1612, when, you know, King James created the authorized version of the Bible. And even with the authorized version of the Bible, there was never anyone named Jesus ever in that. So it's like, where did this name come from? You know, and you come to find out that, you know, the letter J wasn't created not until, you know, the mid 1700s. And so, you know, with having that knowledge, you're like, okay, well, it could never have been anyone, you know, named, you know, Jesus, because there was no letter J. No letter J never existed. So, so anyway, like I said, by, you know, knowing that, now you come to realize that, you know, the name of Jesus was, he went by, Iesus, which, can mean a couple of things. It can mean Hell Zeus, son of Zeus, but it's definitely in reference to the Greek god Zeus. So, you know, it kind of makes you think like, what? Okay, why would Hell Zeus be a part of, you know, what we want to call Christian doctrine, you know, and that's because it's stolen doctrine from, you know, what we want to call pagans, which, you know, to me are just people that are more of a indigenous nature when it comes to certain practices and spirituality and stuff. So, but anyway, I want to say thank you for joining me today on the Lucius Lyron podcast. If you found value in today's episode, please share it with friends and family. And don't forget to like and follow for more content like this. For more resources, you may check out our website at hotrs13.org. Once again, that is HOTRS13.org. Until next time, keep making those small changes for yourself and watch how they add up to a more transformed life. I want you to stay inspired and keep growing. Join me again next time for more discussions on life, astrology, love, science, and spirituality with its connection to our daily lives. And remember to always live in power.